I'm Gab, he's Jules, Blue Skies over West London. Yeah. Jules, a full show once again because we have Napoli losing at home and Milan who go top. We have Barcelona turning on the style. Yeah. We have your boy Camavinga. We have Byron drawing. So much going on, but we have to start at the Manchester Derby. And we're joined by Nadim Anua. Nadim, City go and win 4-1. And can I use the old cliche of the game of two halves? Where in the first half, United kind of keep it close. They play reasonably well for a while. And in the second half, they just fall apart.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. But, you know, that second half from City, you could see them at times just go through the gears. And for United, you know, they, at times, I felt like they had that strategy in the first half was a good strategy for that moment. But the moment there's a chance for them to lose belief in it, it seemed like the belief went. And then they can't revert back to something which has stood them in good stead because they've been struggling for a long part of the season. So then before you know it, for City, like, they look really comfortable. And that's the thing about them. They've got a set identity, as do other really successful teams around the world. And when you go up against them, if they can get into that, it's going to be a tough game for you. And it was crazy to see, like, this is a derby game. And for 15 minutes, City had 92% possession.
Yeah, but
As a professional footballer, at no point should you be on a field and that happens, especially because it's 11 versus 11, because there are teams with less talent that have done better than United did in that second half. So you have to ask a lot of questions. So in the end, you know, it's a great day for Man City. Obviously, it's 3 points, hopefully, for them towards the title. But it really felt like a statement because they were as good as they were. There are a ton of questions now being asked of Man United, which historically tends not to be the case.
All right, Jules. Nadim mentioned how set up. Just for those who didn't see the game, only saw the highlights. Rangnick was without Cristiano Ronaldo, without Edinson Cavani, without Mason Greenwood. He set up in whatever you want to call it, some sort of 4-2-2-2 formation or 4-4-2, where basically you had Alanga and Sancho in wide areas and Bruno and Pogba centrally. You can call one false nine, false ten,
both, maybe both false nines even.
Both false, both definitely. But it kind of worked a little bit to stifle them.
Yeah, it did, to be fair. We were all waiting to see at the stadium how it would pan out, how they would play. And I think certainly for the first half hour, maybe even a little bit more, even if they were 2-1 down at that time, it worked well because they could get the ball out well. I think City struggled to deal with the Bruno and Pogba position between the lines, dropping, sometimes both dropping. So like Laporte and Stones were like, okay, do we go? Do we stay? It's always
Because City only have one guy. There's only Rodri there in front of the back four, right?
So De Bruyne and Bernardo were obviously pushing, which means that at times you had Rodri against Bruno and Pogba. So it was very clever, I thought, from Rangnick. The issue I have is that you knew that at some point City and Pep would work out how to play against that. And when we had a little break because someone had a problem in the stands, and you saw Pep straight away saying, Rodri, Laporte and Cancelo, the three of you, you come. And then he said to Laporte, you have to push and you have to go with them. And from that moment on, City dealt much better with both Pogba and Bruno, with the way United set up. And after that, it was always the feeling of Rangnick has to change something, because if he keeps the same tactics, City are going to walk over them. And that's exactly what they did.
Is that how you see it? You expected? I mean, what could Rangnick have done different in the second half, Nadim?
I don't know. I think if you look on the bench and so on, there were players who we could have brought on to sort of maybe tweak things a little bit. But I don't know. I think, like, unfortunately with United at this moment in time, like, they have a level of talent, but they don't have that identity as such. So for City, like, a slight tweak is something which they do all the time because they come up against opposition. You try and play against them in particular ways. But for United, like, I don't know. There's almost like a lack of belief, it feels like, in certain things. And then once you don't have the ball for a prolonged period, everyone just steps on the back foot. But you need bravery to be able to take on a side like City.
I'd suggest it's probably also the fact that City's manager has been there a very long time, which gives you more scope to do tweaks because you have much more of an identity.
Yeah, and the structure is stronger.
But the other elephant in the room, Cristiano Ronaldo, not there. We were told he had a hip flexor issue. Some people feel that he should have been there regardless, Jules.
Yeah, maybe just to support the team. There was obviously a lot of rumors about the injury or not, because they also...
Did he go to Portugal? Do we know this for a fact?
I don't know for a fact. I was told he was in Portugal, but he might not have been. He might have been in his house in Manchester. He might have been at Nathan's house to watch the game on the sofa. I mean, for all I know, I don't know. Would he have been dropped? Had he been fit, would he have been dropped for this game? I think so. I think Rangnick would have dropped him. It's not a game that Cristiano can play right now, the way City play and the way United would have approached the game. I don't want to believe that someone like him, with his career, like, pretends to be injured because he knows he's going to be dropped. I don't want to believe that. I know this is a rumor that is going around right now. I cannot believe that someone, any player, any footballers, would pretend to be injured because he doesn't want to be on the bench, regardless of what kind of game it is, derby or not derby.
I'll give you my take. I'd love to hear from Nadim as well as an ex-pro, and you can tell me about dressing room dynamics and all this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once Cristiano Ronaldo isn't playing, because the man is 37 years old and he knows his body probably, you know, like a lot of professional athletes know their body really well. I would assume him, with he's got a freaking PhD in Christianology, the study of himself.
Of himself.
If he's not fit to start this game, I see absolutely no reason why he should go there and show up and cheerlead from the bench. Now, I know he won the Euros by cheerleading on the bench, but it's a bit
that's
different.
Not the debate here. And the debate is he injured or not? It's not so much, the controversy is not whether he should have been there or not. I'm just saying it would have been nice maybe for him to support.
The problem is he injured or not? That's not something that we can answer. So I'm not even sure it's something worth debating. Unless Manchester United come out and say he wasn't injured and Ronaldo says, no, I was injured. United have said he was injured. So to me, I have to take that at face value. If at that point he says, I'm 37 years old, I have probably the biggest game that I have left in my career coming up in a couple of weeks in the World Cup playoffs for Portugal.
Yeah.
I'm not playing anyway. Why shouldn't I go to Portugal?
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, Nadim, if you were a teammate, right? I mean, you've got a bit of the McTominays about you. Would you be upset that Cristiano isn't there cheering you on from the stands, and maybe he went to Portugal to get treatment so that he could play for his country and finish the season on the high with doctors who know him better, who've treated him before?
I think there are two sides to that, and I need to talk about the playing for Portugal thing, because for him personally, that might be his biggest game. But for the fans of Manchester United, there's an expectation that he puts all his heart and soul into representing them in the same way he sort of described when he came back. And it wasn't necessarily the case of demanding that he has to be there, but because he's Cristiano Ronaldo, as is the case with other significant players in any club, if they're not available for a game, they can still have a room in the hotel. They can still have a space allocated for them. And I would think of it this way. If by some miracle Man United make it to the Champions League final, Ronaldo's not available, but he's got internationals in 2-3 weeks' time, would he choose to go, or would he just go to Portugal and deal with whatever he needs to deal with? Like, I think it's a funny message for fans to digest, because they love him, you know. And I'm like with Jules, like, I refuse to think that Cristiano Ronaldo has bailed on his team, because this is one of the best professionals, I believe, in the history of football. But then from the same side, like, the game that he's missed is in Manchester. It's the most convenient game to be able to get to support your side, because you don't need to leave your home. But he needs to leave your home to go to Portugal. And again, he's Ronaldo. Surely these doctors or whoever could come to him. He's arguably the most consequential player in the history of football. But he has to fly to Portugal to go and see someone. Like, I don't get it.
It's rare for an injured player to still be there in the what we call the paddock, which is especially in home stadium, just behind the bench, dressed in his normal clothes. Okay, they don't always do it.
Away stadium in this case.
And away, down the road. Yeah, down the road. So your point is valid. I think Nadim's point in a way is valid too. I don't think he should be criticized for it either.
Cristiano Ronaldo's been a professional for 20 years now? And I am not obsessed with Cristiano Ronaldo the way that Cristiano-holics are out there. So I can't tell you it has never happened in his career, and probably has happened in his career, that maybe he accentuated an injury because he was upset at being left out or whatever else. I'm sure it has happened at some point. It's entirely plausible. I just don't remember off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't remember this happening in recent years. What I do remember is Cristiano's teammates at Juventus and at Real Madrid, and early on at United as well, generally praising his professionalism, saying that, yes, he's a diva and an egomaniac, but he's a phenomenal teammate.
Yeah, of course he
is. Right? This has been the consistent message that we've had, even from Juve, where, you know, in the end, they weren't sorry to see him leave.
Sami Khedira told us.
Yeah, all right. Sami Khedira, it's one of many, right?
Yeah.
When the Gavin Jules meets, we spoke to him. So this would seem to me to be so out of character for Cristiano to do at this stage. And I think from United's perspective, I like the fact that rules are rules and whatever. But if you're signing Cristiano Ronaldo, you're not signing a normal footballer. And to some degree, you make allowances. Sir Alex Ferguson made allowances for Eric Cantona.
Yeah.
And we know now for Roy Keane as well, albeit in a different way. You know, Roy Keane was allowed to go and bully Juan Sebastian Veron in a way that maybe other footballers weren't allowed to do, right? So, you know, having said that, I know it's Ronaldo, so it becomes a story, but are we really going to go and dump this on him?
No. No one is dumping
him. No, but I think there's some media that
maybe
are going to go down that road.
What's for sure, though, is yesterday on that pitch, there was a huge leadership problem at Manchester United.
Okay.
Transition
to the United captain. Do you want to discuss him?
Well, yeah. I was not even there. I don't want to, like...
Well, you spoke to him after the game.
Yeah, and he was happy with the first half, and rightly so. Could not explain why they were so tired.
He was happy with his defending in the first half.
He was happy with the way the team played, Harry Maguire. And then I have to say, I bottled it because I was going to ask him, why on earth did you let the ball go between your leg on that De Bruyne second goal? Because, and Nathan, really, I want your input on this. And I know the game goes fast and it's really quick.
Yeah.
However, on the Foden shot that De Gea parries, right into Maguire's feet there in his path, he can easily kick the ball onto the M62, whatever the one that comes near you.
Yeah.
Or in the United fans who are right there in front of him behind that goal. Or even maybe if he, you know, find the right angle, put it out for a throw-in, not even a corner. And yet he decides to let the ball go between his leg, not even knowing what's behind him. And guess what, Harry? Who was behind you? Bernardo Silva.
He was planning on doing a Cruyff turn, perhaps, but just didn't get around to it. No, Nathan, tell us.
Is it because he goes too quick or what?
Tell us, what happened?
So Harry Maguire is in for a lot of criticism at the minute because he's not playing well. People tend to not like his personality, style of play, all that stuff. But he, when he was playing well, I think he had this belief that he's good on the ball and all that stuff. So I believe that he thinks that the way to get out of this situation where people are critical of you is to show people how good you are. Because to let a ball run through your legs, it's like trying to show composure, but he's completely misread the situation. It falls into the trap of what everybody believes he is anyway. I'd say 99% of all players in that instance will kick the ball away. But a player that thinks he wants to prove how good he is at sort of playing the game itself would do something like that. Because it didn't come at him that hot to the point where he had to leave it. Like, it's a weird decision. It's such a shame as well. Because what I say from De Gea, because now we're talking about the fact that he's a centre-back's letting the ball roll through his legs 6 yards out with basically every Man City player right behind him. It's criminal. And I think he needs to get rid of that because he has to go back, in my opinion, to just being a foundationally sound defender. All that other stuff doesn't matter because you look around at all the other centre-backs who are doing well at the moment and nobody cares that they can do Cruyff turns and stuff. They just defend well primarily and now their reputations are higher because of it.
I think it's also about reading the moment. When you've got a back four that's been criticised so much, that's missing, you know, half the starters, because let's say this, Luke Shaw and Raphael Varane were unavailable.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you think of them, that is 50% of the first choice.
That's a back four that costs £175 million, by the way. I'm just putting that out there.
I'm not going to dispute that. But but that's why you read the situation. You read the situation and say this is not the time for smooth defending, bring the ball out.
Yeah.
This is a time for not taking chances because we know we're fragile. And no, by the way, we're playing one of the best teams in the world in Manchester City.
But there's a problem in leadership in that team.
All right.
That second half,
okay,
they gave up.
So let's talk about
another guy who I would think is supposed to be a leader on this team. Because we often talk about homegrown players, they get the club. Your fellow Mancunian, Marcus Rashford. Now, he didn't start. He came on. I don't think he did much at all when he came on. I'm just wondering to myself, right? Marcus Rashford, we can say he's a forward, right? And he's played center forward. And he scored a lot of goals at center forward. Or when he came in with Van Gaal. What does it say when three other center forwards are out and he's not regarded as a serious option to start the game by Ralf Rangnick?
Is it because Rangnick wanted something different to counter Pep, hence the 2-4-9, the Pogba and Bruno's
I'm sure it is, position. But why do you want something different from the guy who is, I believe he's one of United's four or five highest paid players. He's the golden boy. He's homegrown. I know he's had his injury last season and his foot or whatever the hell it was and so on. But at some point, I mean, is it fair to ask, is Marcus Rashford, was he more productive when he was 20 years old than he is now? And what are the reasons for it? And how do you get out of it? And I'd love to hear from you, Nathan, because we see this trajectory. Players come up and come into the first team. They have, you know, they hit the ground running. They score a lot. They look to be on like on a total upward trajectory. And then they get their nose bloodied. And sometimes it takes them time to get back to getting back on track, to fulfilling their potential.
Yeah, I would agree. I think if we were to look at it in totality, you could maybe argue he's not really recovered from the summer at the Euros in terms of how that finished. Because from then, the form that he's shown and so on, it hasn't been up to the standard.
He wasn't great before the summer. He wasn't great last season.
But it's like actually getting worse to the point where I'm hearing fellow Mancunians saying that they need to get rid of one of their own. And that's something which they tend not to do. And for this game, when you choose an Elanga, who I think most people say isn't as good a player as Rashford, but you're choosing him because he's essentially going to run more, like that's a red flag to me. Because for Marcus, especially given the fact it's a derby game, and the same for, say, Lingard and so on, the bare minimum is being able to compete and just try hard for your team in a game which doesn't necessarily require talent to have an influence. So he's not, he's really struggling at the minute, really, really struggling. I don't know if he can't handle the pressure, the fact that he's in and out of the side, but he looks like a shadow of his former self. But then it also, I think it gives sort of credit to the people who do it year in, year out, because at some point, you know, it gets harder because people figure you out. But how do you react? And for Marcus at the minute, shooting from like 40 yards out and trying to take on four or five people, it doesn't work. Yeah. You have to adapt. Yeah. Unfortunately, he's not doing that.
He's lost a lot of confidence.
I'll say this. I mean, obviously, I've never met the guy. I've heard him speak. And obviously, with all the stuff he does, he looks like a very, very nice man. And obviously, he's done fantastic things in his efforts socially and on poverty and whatnot. I think this also shows you the benefits of being a good person, because he's undoubtedly a good person. And I think maybe that's why people are a little more patient than they are with him if he was a nasty piece of work, which he isn't. Because in terms of productivity, and he's obviously in a hole right now. He needs help to get out.
Definitely.
And
but Rangnick has helped Sancho. Sancho is
but actually, on the Sancho point, yeah, he's improved because the first part of the season with Solskjaer was doing nothing, right?
Yeah, yeah. But
here, okay, scored
so
a great
Rangnick
goal.
Can do the same with Rashford.
Right, but Sancho in the second half, the 20 minutes, or even the other Sancho chance, which I thought actually United had some actually pretty good build-up play.
Yeah.
And then he goes and he screws it.
I know.
Somebody's got to step up here. And this is what I struggle with, right? You talk about your leaders, right? You're in this situation. Obviously, Alanga's there just to run, fine, right? But Sancho, Pogba, Bruno, I thought Bruno also, you know, turned into the invisible man. None of these people step up.
No. It was difficult for them. I mean, that second half, really. Really, the attitude was wrong. I mean, you can lose, and there's a point where Cancelo has the ball on the left-hand side, right by the touchline, and Wan-Bissaka is in front of him. Almost, Gab, as like you and me are there, like not even closing him down. And it's an easy ball from Cancelo into midfield towards Rodri or Bernardo or someone, and then Fred fouls him. And Fred turned around at Wan-Bissaka and starts shouting and go like with his hands, clapping the hands, and say, tighter, go closer. And Wan-Bissaka does, instead of maybe apologizing or saying sorry, he points at Fred. Don't know what he's saying, but it was like, well, what about you or you this or you? And I'm like, well, come on, you're 3-1 down, but there's still time to try to put pressure on them, at least do something. Instead of being, they were tourists, they were passengers in that second half. They just look at City passing the ball, and City were great. And you have to give, I think, a lot of credit to Pep and City for tactically correcting the whole thing. Right. We said after half an hour for everybody to step up, including Mahrez, who, by the way, didn't touch the ball in the first 15 minutes. And I was like, what's going on? He did not touch a single ball for the first 15 minutes. And I saw him at the end and I said, bro, what happened? He said, I don't know. He said, clearly they had decided to go on to the Elanga Wan-Bissaka side. With
can't
Grealish,
imagine why.
With Grealish and Cock, don't know why, and Bernardo going to the half space. And that worked well. But still, 15 minutes with nothing from Mahrez. In the end, he has two goals and he was happy. But I think City deserves a lot of credit as well for the way they adapted to Rangnick's tactics and the way they really stepped up in that second half, because they were unplayable for a United team that were disappointing with the wrong attitude. But I think they would have been unplayable at that level for a lot of teams in Europe.
I want to get to City in a minute in the title race, but I want to ask another question. And just for people who don't know, how things work differently in other countries than they do in England. And I'm not suggesting one is right or the other. And you have to, it has to fit the culture that you're in. But when I look at United right now, and you know, there's leaks and stories coming out about the, you know, senior players want this guy doesn't like that guy, this guy doesn't like Ronaldo, this guy doesn't trust Maguire, whatever. What you get in Germany, in France, with Leonardo's yapping constantly, in Italy, the director of football figure is close to the team, but isn't the manager. So he does a lot of speaking to the players. He mediates with the media. He gives the club line. This is completely absent at Manchester United. I mean, not just United, and most English clubs. I don't think anybody's ever heard Cheeky Beginnstein's voice. Perhaps you have, Nadim, and admittedly I have too. But like, but I'm wondering about that in terms of the internal group dynamics. You've got Darren Fletcher there. You've got Murta there. I'm sure Mike Phelan's knocking around somewhere in the background, unless they let him go. I have no idea. I honestly don't know what happened to Mike Phelan. But is there a role, or as a player, did you just relate straight up to the manager and nobody else from the club? Or would there be a role there in terms of some of these internal relations issues for a sporting director, Nadim?
I think, firstly, you'd want a manager that's going to be sticking around for a while and has been there for a while. That's the first key thing. Because
okay, and we know they don't have that. So exactly. There's not much we can do about
that. So then stage two would be somebody who is then aligned to the manager, so they speak from the same, they go from the same hymn sheet. But if there's nothing there like that, then there's nobody to listen to. And I think in this instance, when we look at United, as Jules was saying there about, say, Fred pointing at Wan-Bissaka or Wan-Bissaka pointing back or whatever, you can see there's a lack of belief in each other. So even if somebody came in that director of football role and said to them, no, you need to do better, this is who we are, the fact is they still go on the field with the same people that they don't necessarily agree with. And you can see that sort of fractured relationship. And I think that's football and competing, especially in a team sport, can be very, very hard when everybody's not together. But then you see yesterday, at times they might, in the second half, oh, we're going to go and do like a half press. But the people behind don't believe in the half press, so they go back. And then before you know it, City, because of how good they are, they'll flick a ball over the top of somebody else. And now it's like a split. It's attack versus defense. And that's what happens inside. They don't sort of believe in each other. They don't do things together because they don't buy into it together and have so much disagreeing upon like what the best strategy is. And that's when it would pay to have somebody in power who is there for the long term, because it can make it abundantly clear it's this way or you don't play. Yet instead now, the 5-6 people doing it their own way on the field at any given moment, especially when things go wrong, which is what makes it a lot worse. So director of football in theory could work, but they don't have the infrastructure for it to be able to at the minute.
But they do, you know, because they have Darren Fletcher. He's there, right? And it's not just Fletcher.
But do they believe in him? Do they believe in him, though? That's the question. Do they believe in him?
I don't know what his relationship with Rangnick is, but just to follow the point that Nadim just makes, Rangnick has had some good ideas. He's done some really good things since arriving. Okay, this was really the first top team that they played, and they got destroyed. Okay, but and there's much bigger games coming, by the way. But still, I think he's done some positives in the tactics, and I think the structure of the players at times. But why he's not good at? Because he's a tactician. That's what he does. He's not good for that team spirit. I don't think he's someone. I mean, he looks like a professor anyway. I don't think he can build an attitude and a dressing room environment to make people fight for each other. I don't think he would have. I don't know.
Arsenal had a guy who looked like a professor for a long time, and they did okay. But yeah,
true. But Arsene was not good for. Arsene was never have a pre-match talk where the players would leave the room thinking, "Oh, we're gonna fight for each other." You know, he pumped them up. That's not what Arsene did, and I don't think that's what Rangnick does either. I just do not think he's got that kind of personality of getting all the dressing room pumped up, all the one ready, building that team spirit, that mentality of like, let's fight for each other, let's go until the end, let's do this, let's do that. This is not what he does. And others have been very managers like him have been very successful, just focusing on the tactics and having leaders. And we go back to the leadership, having leaders in the dressing room to play that role of building that team spirit.
Back to the basic point that having all these senior United ex-pros and non-ex-pros who are there, I'd love to know how involved they are, because I think they should be involved. Because whatever happens, Rangnick in 6 months will most likely be gone. Darren Fletcher will still be there. Marcus Rashford will still be there. So I think there is a role for these people to operate, to try to improve the glue in the dressing room. Maybe they're doing it and we don't know about it. Maybe they're not, because we only know whatever.
It doesn't look like this is a very united dressing room. Well, and by the way, Rashford out of contract in June 2023. This is very, very soon. So at some point, someone will have to make a decision whether he
stays
or goes.
All the more reason.
Maybe he even him. Yeah.
All the more reason why, if you're Richard Arnold, you'd want to speak to Fletcher and be like, hey, spend some time with Rashford. Figure out what's going on. On the title race, the gap is 6 points. I was just looking at it. And look, I know that performances... performances matter to me as much as points. And I'd love to believe that there's a title race. But I think we'll get to Liverpool later in quick hits. But I look at how Liverpool have played over the last half dozen games. And look, they've won, I think, 11 of their last 12. And the one that they didn't win, they ended up winning on penalties against Chelsea League Cup. So the results are there. And you can look at it and say, well, they've got heart and whatever. But I look at this and I say, City are playing a lot better.
Really? At Everton? Against Spurs?
Well, in this game.
In this game. But they were not good at Everton. They won. They were not really good defensively against Spurs. They lost.
Okay, so there's nothing to...
I don't know, Nathan, what you think. But I think Liverpool are not playing at their best.
How worried? Let's find out. Let's try to light a fire. How worried are you, Nathan?
Look at him.
Worries? What am I worried about?
Are we squirming in his seat, man?
They're coming for you.
I'm going to talk about it either way, so it makes no difference.
They're coming for you.
No. I think with Liverpool, that they're doing that. They're showing why. Say for throughout the last 4 years, they've been involved in title races because they can churn out results without necessarily playing well. I think the danger is as the season progresses, as is the case for City, as we've seen here with Everton and to a certain extent Spurs. The teams you play against have got their own objectives and the time is running out, so they add a layer of desperation, which you can't really sort of quantify, if you know what I mean. So, like, anything... People saying, like, oh, you know, Liverpool, if they win every game between now and the end of the season, win the league. And I'm thinking, is this how we're casually talking about winning every game in the final third of the season? Like, it's just what, like it's a foregone conclusion. Everybody will have something to play for. Playing teams in the bottom three... come April, May times, completely different fare to what it was back in January, back in December. So there's nothing guaranteed. And then add in the later stages, the Champions League and so on, you don't know. So I think for now, Liverpool being on the run that they're on is great. But if people are saying they're going to win every game, you're talking about a 25, 26 game win streak or something like that. Let's be clear, that's very unlikely, is it not?
He's not worried.
I've got a question for both of you. And I don't know the answer because I've never been involved in a title race, okay? This weekend, Liverpool played before City. So you win, you come back to 3 points. What everybody talks about is they're 3 points behind, they're putting the pressure. The next two game weeks, Liverpool will play again before City. And then there's the one where they play the FA Cup, so their games, including the Liverpool-Man United game, is postponed. Is it important that you play before your title race rivals, Nathan? Or is it actually doesn't really matter so much?
No, I think for City or whoever's on top, they'll pretend it doesn't matter, but it does matter because that early game as well, because it's these teams, will tend to be on TV, so you can't really escape it. And you will be tracking the result to see what happens. And, you know, you could say there's the added pressure if Liverpool win, it goes down to 3 points. But I wouldn't say that. But I'd say there's added incentive if Liverpool don't win and then City play afterwards. I think that level of psychology to it is what I believe is more important. Because, as I say, the City have the lead and whatever. And I think for For Liverpool, I think if City go first and they win, it goes to like 9 points, and Liverpool have got a tough game and it's not going well, there's huge pressure that's upon them. But in terms of the other side of it, I don't see it as much. But it makes for a good title race, in my opinion. And it's a good title race from the outside. But for these two teams, they'll both believe they can win it. But for them, like, it's like, yeah, okay, they've dropped a point. Here's our chance to make it bigger. But I think that's the only thing that really matters, in my opinion.
Rationally, I'd imagine it doesn't make much difference, but you basically always
would
you would generally want to play first because even if you don't get the result, then there's pressure on the other team to take advantage of it. Nadim, thank you so much.
It was an absolute pleasure, guys. Take care.
Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough MCR. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Liverpool keep pace with City at the top of the table, beating West Ham 1-0. Jules, they probably conceded more than they would have liked, but yeah. How about that Trent Alexander-Arnold?
Wow, I don't know if you want to talk about the assist first or the goal line clearance.
The goal line clearance, you know, when you came out, oh, are you going to say you can't defend anymore? All right, it's a dude chasing back. That's not how I evaluate defending.
No, definitely not. Right? It's still a great effort.
But still tremendous effort, props
and
for that. But
Fornals should have scored. But I love the assist because at no point he even looks up to see where Mane is, the defenders are, the goal is, the keeper is maybe. He just has this incredible feeling. Or he might have looked before and has the picture in his head already, which I think... Which he does, I think.
Yeah. And his brain processes things quicker, and he has the technical ability to deliver.
Incredible. I think he's an incredible talent. And that, again, I think people take it for granted, even Liverpool fans. And I do think that he's still underestimated on how good he is on the ball. Yeah, there's a lot of things to work on. But, like, come on, man.
He's maybe having his third best season as a pro,
and he's
still leading the table in assists.
It's incredible. I'm not sure.
He's had better years.
I'm not sure.
Well, just because he's been even better in other seasons, I think.
It's not because he might have had more assists than he was better, though, because he does some things this season that I just think he's gone to another level again. Huge wins for Milan, away to Napoli to go top of Serie A, and Gab is the handsome World Cup winner. My boy Olivier Giroud did it. 2 goals against Inter and a goal against Napoli.
Yeah, pops up, right place, right time to deflect Calabria's weirdo shot, cross, whatever that was. I feel for Napoli a little bit. I thought both teams went at it. Both played with a lot of energy. But then in the second half, Milan pulled away. And I think they're deserving winners, taking the goal aside. Do thank Napoli that Osimhen, Tomori on Osimhen, I thought that should have been a penalty. Afterwards,
yeah,
Tomori,
I thought too.
By the way, Tomori's... Well done, Ficayo, if you're watching this, because as Italian, pretty darn good for an English guy.
Him and Kalulu, I thought, did well on the way they...
I'm talking about how he speaks Italian.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I know.
Kalulu's French. I expect him to speak Italian. But they defended very well. Not that long ago, you would have thought, oh, Chiara Romagnoli out, Milan screwed. Mm. But we've gone way past that.
Yeah.
Chelsea score 4 after the break to win 4-0 at Burnley. Jules, Kai Havertz looked good, really good. Romelu Lukaku stayed on the bench. Is he first choice now?
It certainly looks that way. I still want to believe that you can also adapt a bit to the opposition, maybe. But
What, you're playing Burnley, so you don't want your big, strong centre forward in there?
But it was exactly the same before Liverpool. I thought, okay, maybe you're going to put Lukaku back because, you know, it's Van Dijk and Matip or Konate or whatever. And actually, Havertz was really good, and he was really good against the big Burnley defenders, and again, a rough team and an aggressive team. So, yeah, I mean, why would you take Havertz out of your team when he's in such good form, when he brings so much, when he's clinical, when he's intelligent in the way he moves, when he helps your team?
You're heavily invested in both players.
Yeah, but
I would like to see them together more often, personally. I know Pulisic, if he's in there, gives you something different, and for some reason Werner and Ziyech has the creativity, but, you know, why not have Mount behind a front two?
Yeah, maybe. And by the way, every time Havertz scores or does well, it's a good excuse to listen to the Chelsea fans singing his songs, because it's a pretty good song. So, Thomas Tuchel had harsh words, however, Gab, for the minority of Chelsea supporters who interrupted the minute of silence or of applause for the victims of the war in Ukraine to support the people of Ukraine by singing Roman Abramovich's name.
Yeah, like, I mean, to me, 100% praise for Thomas Tuchel.
Oh, yeah.
Because however you think about this, right, even if you're so single-minded and invested and you think that Roman Abramovich is being scapegoated here, and look, maybe he is, I don't know. But that is not the moment to do it. You're remembering victims of war. That is not the moment to sing Roman Abramovich's name.
I know.
And well done, Tuchel.
That was crazy.
Jules, why does Christophe Galtier have a voodoo hex over Paris Saint-Germain? Last year, he guided Lille past them to win Ligue 1. This year, with Nice, he did the league double over them and knocked them out of the French Cup.
Yeah, so they drew actually in Paris 0-0. So it's not it's not as much of a league double, really, but it's still good. It's still amazing. I think he tactically gets it, how resilient they are. They don't give you much. And when on top of it, Kylian Mbappe is not playing, which I've told you many times before, if you take Mbappe out of this team...
Oh, you only have Messi and Neymar, so...
But collectively, there's not much left, so...
It's not much
you're
left.
You're Messi, I'm Neymar, I pass you the ball, you pass me the ball. It's all into feet, there's no movement,
and Hakimi... And we pass it back to Verratti plays it into space. There was no Hakimi either.
There's no... Oh, Nuno Mendes.
Yeah, I don't need to see much more of Thilo Kehrer at right back.
We haven't even
mentioned Wijnaldum. Gini Wijnaldum did something incredible. He played in midfield for 45 minutes for a team that had 55, 60% of possession, and he touched the ball nine times. How's that possible?
I don't want to think about it. It was such a bad game. PSG was so bad. I don't even think about it. Speaking of PSG, though, Gab, their Champions League opponents on Wednesday night, Real Madrid beat Real Sociedad 4-1 to go 8 points clear at the top of La Liga. And some doubted Eduardo Camavinga, another one of my boys. They were right to do so.
I thought he was phenomenal.
Yeah,
he scored a great goal. He's so smart, read the game well.
Yeah, the energy
He was playing for Kroos in there, interprets the position differently. In midweek, he'll likely be replacing Casemiro, which is a different challenge for you. It's easy to forget because he's been starting since the 2019 season.
Yeah.
But the guy doesn't even turn 20 years old until November.
I know.
So good, big shout out. And also, fine, aggressive, high press performance from Real Madrid and Ancelotti. Not something we've seen all the time this season. Mm-hmm. So, big plus for them. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Jules, horrifying scenes from the Liga MX where the match between Querétaro and Atlas had to be abandoned on Saturday night after fighting between rival sets of fans. It spilled out on the pitch. It was in the stands. 26 people were injured, some very seriously. I thought scenes like this belonged to the past.
Me too, Gab. It was quite horrendous to watch. The league has been suspended now, and rightly so. I don't even know how you, what your next move is if you're Liga MX, if you're, you know, what you do to the two clubs and to the set of fans. It's obviously not every single fan, we get that, but this was really ugly. It's such a bad publicity for Mexican football in general, for Mexico in general as well, not just the football side of it.
I mean, big policing issues. With Cristina Fernandez on the FC show last night, she said that there were about 600 between private security, cops and so on at the stadium. I don't know where they were. I didn't see them.
Clearly
something went badly.
I mean,
wrong.
We saw in Brazil as well at the weekend, one fan died in the Cruzeiro Atlético Mineiro. It's just like, this has to stop.
We don't need
it.
It
really has to stop. Barcelona win 2-1 away. Elche and Gab, we saw a contentious penalty, one given for Barca, one not given for Elche. But certainly the Xavi revival continues.
Yeah, as you know, I like to separate performance and results. Yeah. So as far as the penalties are concerned, I don't see why. I thought Barcelona's penalty should not have been given.
I agree.
He took it very, very well, but it should not have been given.
Yeah.
I thought the other one, the Jordi Alba one that they asked for, also should not have been given.
Yeah.
Look where his
arm
is. No. Yeah. That said, Barcelona played really, really well. They played well first when they had Alba and Dembélé in the first half. In the second half, I thought they even went up a notch when Ferran Torres came on, Adama Traoré as well. Frankie de Jong missing a bunch of chances.
Yeah,
you worry when teams don't create chances. They created plenty. They were solid at the back.
Very promising.
Four games in a row
very promising.
Things are looking up. And they have that extra confidence because you could see, you know, the penalty came in the 84th minute. You could see the old Barcelona 1-1. Yeah. Oh, no, what are we going to do? Freaking out. Uh-uh. These guys had the confidence. Mm. Bayer Leverkusen hold Bayern München to a 1-1 draw, which is much better than last time they played them when they conceded five before halftime. Jules, our boy Julian Nagelsmann struggling a little bit.
I have to say, I watched it and I watched it again, and I'm still not sure tactically exactly what he wanted to do. Not just in this game, but in the last few weeks. Upamecano is clearly going through a bad patch. He's lost confidence. That back pass for Sven Ulrich, that Adli, that Adli almost intercepted and then hit the post when really he should have scored. I thought Adli and Diaby, like poor Upamecano, could not even follow them. He could not even see them. It was like they were flash.
Well, maybe he shouldn't be a left centre back.
Maybe he should not be playing even at the moment, and maybe just go back to something a bit more traditional. Let's put it that way. Lucas Hernandez was suspended. He's back now. I don't know, but try to do something a bit different. Because
your assessment of Omar Richards, for the benefit of our Reading supporting producer?
Yeah, I think maybe another time. But you know what? You didn't lose. No. You've won the title anyway, even if they'd lost that game. It's just
it's
just not clicking.
It is a string, though, of results where they don't click.
Yeah.
Manuel Neuer coming back.
Yeah, that's big.
I think that should help as well.
Lewandowski was really quiet. One of the most quietest games that he had this season.
And by the way, Bayer Leverkusen, no Patrick Schick. And Florian Wirtz did play, but I think he had a minimal impact in this game.
Juventus beat Spezia 1-0 as Alvaro Morata scores the winner. Gap 14 games unbeaten now for Max Allegri, 7 points back. They're closing in, and very soon I think there's a Juve-Inter, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's where we're going to kind of realize what they are. It is 14 games unbeaten. It's not 14 good performances.
No.
I don't think this is particularly impressive either. They could have added a second one.
They controlled the game.
Late on. You control to a point, but you know.
I mean, the second half, Spezia, okay, that header could have gone in maybe, but.
But the thing about Spezia is they're all over the place, and then, you know, you make one mistake, and then you've got 2 points. I don't know how far you can get doing this, but hey, they've gone this far, so they can prove me wrong. Yeah. They're only 7 points back.
Yeah, that's true.
Arsenal are in the top four after beating Watford 3-2. Jules, they're ahead of United and West Ham, and they have 3 games in hand. How about some love for Arteta?
He deserves some, and not just for the mini assist that he had on the third goal when he's quick thinking on the touchline, throws the ball to Bukayo Saka, who then plays the throw in quickly, and then it's one touch for a wonderful goal. Collectively, from Martinelli, great finish as well, but the Cedric, Odegaard, Lacazette, Martinelli move was fantastic.
Some great goals in this game.
Yeah, great goals, even from Watford. And
the
maybe,
best one was Cucho's.
Although he shins it a little bit, but still, it's still great. It's still great. But I love the way Arsenal moves with the ball going forward. I loved Odegaard. Yeah, defensively, they conceded two and a couple
and
of big chances.
And they let Watford get back into it.
Yeah, true, okay. But I think you should, after a game like this, look at the game, look at the glass half full, because I think it was very good half full, more than a bad half empty.
Yeah.
Tammy Abraham scores his 20th goal of the season in all competitions, and Roma defeat Atalanta 1-0. And what about the Zaniolo control and assist as well? Still no Jose Mourinho because he's suspended. But Gab, they're up to fifth.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, maybe Mourinho might want to get more suspensions. Just work with the team during the week.
Yeah, just don't turn up on the
day. I mean, he's still getting his messages across. this was a game where, Atalanta, they've got players out. They're just not at the races. But Roma played well. And that Zaniolo-Tammy Abraham partnership is working. I have to laugh earlier when, dropped Zaniolo and, the Mourinho holic says, Zaniolo's rubbish. Mourinho's doing the right thing. Everyone. No. Zaniolo is absolute quality. And Tammy Abraham, he's so smart. When you have that combination of athleticism and intelligence and work rate, and you're the size he is, it's really, really tough for defenders to handle. Atletico Madrid are also in the top four after beating Betis 3-1. Jules, this time, no wobbly defending from Diego Simeone's crew.
No, even if they were dominated, well, certainly let the ball to Betis. I mean, they had 32%, I think, in the first half or something.
But I don't think Betis created that many clear-cut chances. They scored, it was that phenomenal shot from the edge of the box.
From Teo. But yeah, I thought this was such a vintage. For all the Simeone 2.0 that we looked for, or signs of something a bit different, of improvement, they went back to what they do the best. And that's exactly what they did. That third goal is a killer, the Griezmann, Thomas Lemar, 100% French goal. It's just, when they're like this, they're so hard to beat.
What about Rodrigo De Paul's performance? No, phenomenal.
Yeah. And even when Carrasco came on, it was really positive. For Betis team, okay, maybe they're a bit tired now. They've played so many
games. They played Thursday night against Lyon, the Copa del Rey.
And Joaquin, by the way, will have another chance to win it, to win the Copa del Rey. First time since the first week of the season where we have the big four, Real Madrid, Sevilla, Barca and Atleti, all in the top four. Inter played on Friday night and put 5 goals past Salernitana. Gab, they still have that game in hand, of course, I think against Bologna. Lautaro scored 3, Dzeko scored 2. And they continue to be linked to Paulo Dybala.
All right, 2 things on this. First of all, it's really important for them that Lautaro scores again. He's the most substitute player in Serie A. He's young, he shouldn't come off the pitch all the time. His confidence seems to be back. Stayed there scoring a lot of goals.
Good hat trick.
It's a really good hat trick. The Dybala story, my views on this. I think this is ridiculous. And look, the reason they're being linked is that his agents are in town. They're meeting on Thursday.
Yeah.
Borussia Dortmund avoid defensive embarrassment this weekend, mainly because their game against Mainz is postponed after a COVID outbreak among their opponents. But Jules, there's still plenty of Erling Haaland talk, with Manchester City and Real Madrid reportedly in pole position.
Yeah, that's right, Gab. And Madrid are now saying, no, we want him now. We don't want him in 2023 in the summer, blah, blah, blah. I think City still feel the favourite. He will have this pick. He can go wherever he wants. There's a long way to go, a long saga. If Dortmund were hoping for a quick...
No, there won't be.
Conor McGregor is apparently determined to buy a football club, Gav. He says he's exploring the possibility of taking over Chelsea, Manchester United or Celtic. Is that serious?
So, look, the reason I put this question in is because to remind people that Chelsea are for sale. But, he's a Manchester United fan, so that's why I want to buy Manchester United. He's Irish, so I'm assuming that's why he wants to buy Celtic. No, he doesn't have enough money. He's not going to buy it. Done. We're not talking about him again.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Jesse Marsh makes his debut as manager of Leeds United and they fall to Leicester City 1-0. Jules, what did you make of his debut?
So earlier you said that you like looking at the performance more than the result, and I think this is what we should do. Okay, the result is not good. You don't want to lose. You never want to lose, especially on your debut and stuff. However, I thought the content of the performance, certainly for an hour, was really good. They had a lot of chances, certainly a lot of shots. I thought they pressed well. They looked even more solid and, I guess, better organized in a way defensively compared to before March arrived. It's disappointing to lose and lose like that, but I think there was still a lot of positives from that first performance.
It's not just me who said it. He said the same thing. Like, I like to look at performance more than results. And I was watching Match of the Day here in the UK, and they're like, yuck. No, surely he means results because they're going to go down. I get their point too, but I'm with them. Look, I'm programmed to really dislike Jesse Marsh because of his Princeton roots. But equally,
I thought that was encouraging. Yeah. Everton play Spurs on Monday night, just a few hours after we record this. But the Mail on Sunday reports that sanctions on Alisher Usmanov, who's involved with Everton, of course, mean that they could have $300 million hole in their account, in their budget.
Which is obviously a big factor when you think that they're building a new stadium. Listen, at some point, I would presume these funds will be unfrozen and so on. So it's just a question perhaps of delaying things if you're, if you're an Everton fan. But I also think this is a golden opportunity to go in forensically and discover, hey, all this money for Farhad Mashiri, who, for those who don't know, Farhad Mashiri worked for Usmanov for a long time. Then he pops up and says, oh, look, I'm buying the club with my money. And then Usmanov has got some sponsorship deals and whatever. I don't want to be libelous or get myself in trouble, but people have asked the question, so like, hey, Farhad, how did you make enough money to buy the club when, you know, normally when you work for somebody else, you don't normally make hundreds of millions. I'd love to see some proper forensic accounting from the Premier. This is a great opportunity.
Let's just find out.
Listen,
that's true.
It doesn't mean that it's tainted if Usmanov owns it, as long as Usmanov hasn't committed any crimes. But let's have some clarity on who owns what. And I think, listen, you know my thoughts on Newcastle and their owners, right? But they had to account for everything, and they had to be very transparent because there was a lot of scrutiny. With this one, I don't think there really was. I just want to know owns the club. And Bill Kenwright, if you're listening, and if you know, why don't you tell us, since you care about Everton so much? Leipzig and Freiburg share the spoils, and that's only because of Angelino's last-ditch equalizer.
Oh, yes.
Jules, lovely. They're both 2 points behind the Hoff in fourth place and 4 points behind Bayer Leverkusen in third. Who's getting into the Champions League?
This is going to be fascinating because the Hoff, as you said, Sebastian Hoeneß, 4 wins in a row, I think, incredible. And the rise, I mean, they're very much in the mix. I still think that Bayer Leverkusen and Leipzig should, you know, should
Christian Streich running out of miracles?
I know they play in the Europa League, of course, and you know that's it's a heavy schedule compared to.
Well, it's not their game against Spartak Moscow is not.
For Leipzig, you know. So, but I still think they've got the biggest squads. They should surely see this one out. But it's going to be great. There's a lot of big, you know, races for the top four finish. So in a lot of the leagues, that's great. Ciro Immobile scores for Lazio in the 3-0 win over Cagliari and becomes the club's all-time joint goal scorer, equaling Silvio Piola. Gab, how significant is this? And well done to him as well, of course.
Well done to him. Now, for those who don't know, Silvio Piola is the all-time leading goal scorer in Serie A. He's one of those guys who played before the war. He played for like a million years and he scored 572 or 574 goals. Something crazy like that. He's just a joint leading goal scorer at Lazio because he spent some of his career at Lazio. I think it's like 139 goals. But it is significant because this is a guy who's bounced around a lot. He's had setbacks. Now he's found his niche. He's scoring goals like there's no tomorrow. And I'd appreciate it even more if he scores a couple goals in the playoffs. Marseille fall at home to Monaco 1-0. Jules, why can't my man Jorge Sampaoli get anything going?
Listen to this. At home this season in the league, they have dropped 22 points. Who drops 22 points at home when you're a big club in a big league? No one does that. 22 points.
And you play at the Velodrome and you've got a pretty passionate fan base.
Incredible. And they were booing. Trust me, they were booing on Sunday night because Marseille were good in the first half and Monaco were dreadful. And then, as you said, the game of two halves, blah, blah, blah. Monaco were much better in the second half and Marseille just disappeared. I don't know what's going on. Disappeared. But like, there's just, again, it's not good. And Franck McCourt, the owner, who was in town from the US, every time he comes, he jinxes them. They never win. So maybe stay in LA or in Boston or wherever you are, Frankie, but it's not good. And it's a tough time for them.
It's funny because these two clubs are such polar opposites, right? Because Monaco, right down to their stadium. I was imagining the Monaco Ultras traveling to Marseille, like both of them.
All five of them, exactly.
with their driver.
Yeah, big rivalry.
In the Escalade.
It's a big win for Philippe Clement as well, because they hadn't been playing well lately. Argentina announced their pre-selection squad for the next international break, and they are a bunch of guys that most of you, of us, would have never heard of, Gab.
And I'm sure you've heard of these people. I have to say, I had not heard of most of these people. It does test you a little bit,
It does, yeah. The Carboni brothers are in Inter, Valentin and Franco. You've got Thiago Garalnik from Villarreal, Alejandro Garmacho from Manchester United. None of them have made their first team debut, by the way. And yet, they're all in it. What did Lionel Scaloni?
There's also Lucas Romero from Lazio. Yeah, he has made a couple of appearances.
Mallorca, remember? He was that 15-year-old.
So I find this really interesting. Basically, all of these people are... they're all dual nationality. They're all very young. They're all essentially youth team players. They all have dual nationality or triple nationality. I think it's Garalnik who's Garalnik, I think, is Mexico, Argentina, and Italy maybe, or Spain. Yeah, Spain, I don't know. And basically, he wants to bring these guys in young, bring them to the national team. Have them train with Lionel Messi.
Clever.
Let them know what El Mundo Albiceleste is all about.
Clever.
And hopefully that'll influence their shot. I think it's very, very clever.
Very clever.
And maybe your boy Didier Deschamps should do that. God, goodness knows, there's enough talented kids in France who are eligible. Maybe if somebody had done that years ago with Khalidou Koulibaly, maybe he would have won a couple more World Cups.
Exactly. Who knows? Who knows?
Bordeaux are one of the great French clubs, but things are going from bad to worse there, Jules. Last year, they became insolvent. King Street, who are like these sort of cartoon villain funds from the U.S., they basically pulled the plug, made the club insolvent. Mm-hmm. Then they ended up with Gerard Lopez, who I'm in two minds about because I've interviewed him. He's a fascinating guy. People at Lille don't have very nice things to say about him.
That's true.
Again, he doesn't have nice things to say about Lille either, so works both ways. But their dead last is not looking good.
Not looking good. I mean, they're still, they're level on points with the team, the two teams above them in that bottom three, and two behind 17th and 16th. It's not like they were 15 points behind and were certain to go down. However, that game at the weekend against Troyes at home as well was terrible, really terrible. They changed manager, Petkovic was sacked, David Guillon came in. We haven't really seen much of it. They've got good players. Certainly some are talented, but I don't know, collectively they're struggling. My fear, Gab, is that if they go down, I think I could see the club just putting the key under the door and this is it. You know, and Bordeaux would be gone forever. Because it's that bad. Financially, they are struggling so badly that I think going down could be the end of them, which is crazy to think about it. So I really hope they can turn it around.
What I'm not clear on is, given the way Gerard Lopez left Lille and the reasons why he left Lille, right? In France, you have the DNCG, which is this financial control body. They're supposed to be the real sticklers for the rules.
Everybody's wondering the same thing.
How did they let him get in there? I mean, maybe he found money, but did they have the full controls?
Yeah, they had all the checks. So they said, you know, all the everything to go and to say, okay, he's legit in what he wants to do with this club. A lot of it was down to a top 10 finish. I mean, the bottom now, okay?
Yeah.
He budgeted on a top 10 finish, which was always a long shot. So they believe that, clearly. And then they have a goodish academy, not one of the best in France, but decent one. And I think, again, the players trading was at the heart of it all. Okay, it's no problem to trade players. But if you bottom of the table, who's going to come and buy your players? Exactly. Even the most talented. So it's a crazy mess. And I'm really, really fearing for them. Former Lazio captain Pino Wilson passed away over the weekend. Gab, he was part of one of the most colorful teams ever.
Yeah, and look, I tell this story just kind of to illustrate how the game has changed. Pino Wilson was an Italian international. His father, I think he might have even been born in England. His father was English anyway. But he was at Lazio when they won their first title, 1973-74. And you want to talk colorful, wild times. This team was absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
For a start, this was a team that had the legendary Giorgio Chinaglia. He was a center forward. This is a team which was essentially split right down the middle. You had a hardcore of, at the time, there was a lot of political turmoil in Italy between the sort of neo-fascist types on the right and hardcore communists on the left. Both were represented in the team, and they would have literal fist fights at training all the time. Pino Wilson, as captain, even though he think he was pretty much to the right, he would always find a way to bring them together on the pitch during games, and then the fighting would start immediately afterwards. I don't know, one of these players, I don't know if it was him, used to have a gun permit. He used to carry it with him on the team bus. And this is a team that played phenomenal football to win the title. And then it all fell apart, in part due to one of the most incredible, most tragic stories ever. They had a midfielder named Luciano Rececconi. I know he's got nothing to do with Wilson, other than his teammates, but it is a tremendous story. Rececconi was a prankster. He loved to go around and play jokes on people. So he thought it would be funny to go to a jewelry shop where he had bought jewelry from earlier, and go in and pretend that he had a gun and he was robbing the jewelry store.
Yeah, that's funny.
And tragically, the jeweler, who had been robbed several times before, he had a legally registered gun. He felt threatened, and he went and he shot and killed him. And that is part of sort of the curse of this Lazio team and how, despite all the talent that they had, they fell apart very, very quickly. So, but Pino Wilson, a huge figure in the history of Lazio. Russia have responded to being hit by sanctions over the conflict in Ukraine by blacking out pro-Ukraine messages and Western media in general, but not the Premier League.
No, it's strange, isn't it? I mean, I don't even know how to react to it. Is it because...
I think it's a technical issue because...
It has to be. Why would
they
you just
get the pictures in? It's not like they can black out the crowd. But I thought it was interesting. It shows the appetite for watching football.
Especially when the Premier League is thinking about what to do with the broadcast deal that they have for the Russian broadcaster who's broadcasting the Premier League back in Russia. So, I saw it as well this weekend and I was like, wow, I don't really get it. Sometimes, Gab, we get incredible, heartwarming stories from the world of football. So tell me about Sasha Clexton and Chris Haggard, who met again this weekend, 12 years after they first met.
This is just such a sweet, inspirational story. Sasha Clexton, who, I have to confess, I'd lost track of him. I thought he'd retired. But no, apparently he plays for the LA Galaxy.
He still plays well his moustache.
So in 2010, Sasha Clexton goes and he's sent around to go and visit sick children, as a lot of footballers do. And he meets this little boy named Chris Haggard, who I guess would have been 8 years old at the time. Not 100% sure. I think he was suffering some he was undergoing radiation treatment because he was bald. And now, 12 years later, he plays against them when the LA Galaxy played Charlotte. It is absolutely
incredible.
Heartwarming story. Gave each other a big hug, and I think it shows a lot of inspiration and motivation. And I was just really, really moved.
Yeah, it's a lovely, lovely story. Yeah.
Jules, we're done, but we're gonna be back on Thursday, right? We have to. The Champions League is back. Woo. Unbelievable. Yeah. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.